Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
This looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, MGM Springfield, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sox trying to hang in. Swing and a miss, and that'll do it here tonight. This one got away late, didn't it? Minnesota scoring four times in the eighth inning.
See, you know, Jim Murray, I can admit it. I admit it that sometimes this job, not sometimes, maybe overall, this job has gotten the better of me. Years ago, I used to cover baseball. Losses like this, I sort of chalk up to being part of the 162. But now, in talk radio, let's face it. You got to be a little bit more, day-to-day. You got to live a day-to-day existence. You got to live the existence of the fan. Win and die with every win and loss.
The takes won't conjure themselves, man.
No. You got to come up with the takes. So you do, yeah. We give cross-sections. That's what we do. I remember years ago, Theo Epstein said that to me. Like, we don't do cross-section analysis. And he's right. But I do. That's what I do. I do cross-section analysis. So here's what we're going to give you today. 617-779-0985. On the Baseball Reporters, Red Sox with an absolute implosion late in that game last night against the Minnesota Twins. And so to me, here's a simple question. That eighth inning, like you look at it, who don't you blame, let alone who do you? And for those of you who missed the game, I'll lay it out for you. Red Sox were up 1-0. Chris Sale gives up a couple of runs in the sixth. Now it's 2-1 Minnesota. You go into the top of the eighth. The Red Sox rally. Sandy Leon gets a big hit. You tie the game 2-2. 2-2, top of the eighth. Inning ends, you go to the bottom of the inning. And warming in the bullpen to enter the game in the eighth inning were two guys. Joe Kelly or Robbie Scott. Robbie Scott, left-handed reliever, who had just joined the team. Robbie Scott just added to the active roster when Justin Haley was sent back to AAA. So at this stage of this Red Sox season, on June 19th, 2-2 game, eighth inning on the road. You have the number 9 hitter coming up for the Twins and then two left-handed batters. Let me ask you, Murray Lister. Let me ask you, Jimmy Stewart. And let me ask you, the Red Sox follower and fan. 617-779-0985. 2-2, entering the bottom of the eighth. 9-1-2 due up for the Twins and the last two are left-handed batters. Do you go with, if you are Alex Cora, who do you choose? Do you choose Joe Kelly, who has been maybe your best setup man all year long, or do you choose Robbie Scott? Murray, who do you choose?
Joe Kelly.
Jimmy Stewart, who do you choose?
Joe Kelly.
I, too, would have gone with Joe Kelly in that situation. Now, who did Alex Cora choose?
Robbie Scott.
Okay, so this one blows me away.
It's inexcusable. It really is.
And so, if you are a Red Sox fan, and you are worried about Alex Cora making big decisions later in the year, you should destroy any evidence of this game because this will shake your confidence in the manager. It will. 9-1-2 due up. And, important detail here, the last two are left-handed batters, but Joe Kelly has been one of your best pitchers this year against left-handed batters. In fact, even with last night, and Kelly ended up giving up a triple last night, to a left-handed batter, and that was Escobar, right? The number 3 hitter in the lineup? Or actually, before that was a double. He gave up a triple later in the inning. But that aside, Joe Kelly has been one of your best against left-handed batters all year. And nonetheless, in that spot, Alex Cora goes to Robbie Scott, and boy, I just don't get it. I don't get it. And so to me, this opens up again. I just felt like all of the Red Sox weaknesses were on display last night in Minnesota. It's only one loss. It's a 6-2 defeat to the Twins. But there are a number of things you can look at in that game and say, boy, did the Red Sox really blow it? Peter Abraham touched on this in the Globe today. I think they went 2-for-13 with runners in scoring position. But that one I can live with because the guy you were going against was a good pitcher. Jose Berríos, a good starting pitcher. So you went 2-for-13 with runners in scoring position. But Jackie Bradley made key outs in the 7th and 8th innings. And to me, Bradley is one of the real weaknesses in that lineup. Then Bradley made a fielding error in the 8th that contributed to a 4-run rally. Cora made a pair of bad decisions, bringing in Robbie Scott in place of or instead of Joe Kelly to start the inning. And then beyond that, keeping him in the game. Keeping him in the game. It just made no sense whatsoever. And so the Red Sox bullpen issues, that 8th inning, Alex Cora making key decisions, Bradley's offense, all of it on display. I also want to touch on Chris Sale. We'll hit more on Bradley. In an interesting comment by Dave Dombrowski made to Sean McAdam of the Boston Sports Journal regarding the Red Sox minor league system and whether or not they have the artillery to make a trade. We'll get to that as well. And Jim Murray will spin the wheel of gutless bums that sometimes inhabit the Red Sox bullpen. We'll do that for you in the next segment as well. 617-779-0985. We'll kick it off tonight with Chris, who's in a car. Chris, go ahead. What do you got?
How's it going? First time. Been listening for a little while now. And the one thing I've noticed with Bradley is when he broke out of his slump a few weeks back, he started hitting well. And since he's dropped to, like, batting probably like 100 since then, but his batting average on balls in play is 074, and he's actually hitting the ball harder than when he started to heat up again. So could he really just be the least lucky hitter in baseball? Because his swings have looked good. And
no.
I mean, 074 in batting average on balls in play with an exit velocity of 94.5. I mean, that's major league average is 89. So he's hitting the ball harder than by 5 miles an hour and getting out almost every time when he makes contact, but hitting it hard. I mean, that's not weak roundouts and weak pop flies.
So listen, Chris, I understand what you're saying, but this is the point where the statistics in baseball and the data overrides the reality of it. If you want to tell me that Jackie Bradley overall has made better contact in the last few weeks, is that what you're saying, 3 weeks?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if he's hitting the ball that hard, he's due to heat up real soon again. If he keeps making these types of swings, they can't keep finding the gloves. They hit the ball that hard, they got to start falling.
Okay, but we're talking about what, the last 3 weeks or so?
Yeah, because he was obviously slumped for the first 2 months of the season, then he started to heat up again, and now he's slumped, and he's been showing like he's slumping. He was over like 18 or 19, something stupid like that. But over that time, he probably had three or four lineouts. He's been hitting the ball hard. They've been right at people the whole time.
Okay, but Chris, I guess ultimately what I'm saying is here's my point. What is the greater, more valuable sample or more legitimate sample with Jackie Bradley? Is it a 2-month sample to start the year, or is it just these 3 weeks?
I say with Bradley, 2 months and then a month of him heating up is so common that this year has been his whole career. So do you try and ride him while he's about to probably get hot again and see how much he can get you before he will drop off? He'll hit well for another 3 weeks or a month, then he'll drop off for the rest of the season.
Okay, so Chris, look, obviously I disagree with you on whether Bradley's stats are or are not misleading, and I hear what you're saying about him getting hot over a period of time. I'm going to ask you a simple question. Do you think he's a good player?
I think he is a slightly above-average Major League Baseball player that I like it when he's hot, but I can't wait for them to move on from him.
Okay, so again, to me, he's not above-average player. He's a slightly above-average Major League player? No way, not a million years, Jackie Bradley. Jackie Bradley made a big out in the 7th. He made a big out in the 8th. Defensively, he's great. I'm still waiting for someone here over the course of the program. Someone's going to call and ask me about that great throw that Bradley made to end the 8th. I know someone's going to call because every time Bradley makes a great defensive play, there's someone out there who gets so awestruck by the thing that they can't get it out of their head. Just like that catch he made running backwards into the triangle and catching the ball over his shoulder a few weeks ago. That was what, Memorial Day, I think it was. It was a fabulous catch that he made. People are still talking about it. How many of those do you make a year? See, this is the problem with Bradley, that you remember the highlights. Okay, you remember that, and this was true of like Jacoby Ellsbury, and now I'm going off on a tangent, but the highlight, you remember the highlights, and they stick in your head, and you say, whoa, what a play. But the other 90% of the time, he really doesn't do anything. So I look at Bradley, the whole weighted body with Jackie Bradley, and I say negative. Alex Cora last night, negative. And as much as I make a commentary on Cora putting the pitchers in that he did, and he deserves criticism, let's not make the relievers exempt either. Because the eighth inning for the Red Sox remains an absolute gorge. It is a bottomless hole, that eighth inning. It is bottomless. They cannot figure out the eighth inning, and between now and the trading deadline, Dave Dombrowski's got to find a solution. 617-779-0985. When we come back, Jim Murray will give us his bit. Spinning the wheel of gutless bums, that's next.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matt Barnes! Oh. Heath Henry! Joe Kelly! And those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of gutless bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
Barnes, Kelly, Thornburg, right, Thornburg, Kelly, Barnes, right, Thornburg, Kelly, Barnes.
And today's gutless bum is...
Robbie Scott, are you f***ing kidding me?
2-2 pitch. Shot into left center field, that is down for a hit. Lamar coming, and that one gets through to go all the way to the fence. That's going to score a couple of runs. And this one getting away here in the eighth inning. 1-1. Socked into right center field. Jackie Bradley, long run, won't get it, gets by him. Escobar is in. Here comes Dozier rounding third. He's trying to score. He will as the throw trickles in. And Minnesota is starting to run away from the Boston Red Sox here tonight.
So our thanks to Jim Murray.
The more I think about it too, Maz, not to cut you off real quick, but just if you don't really listen all that much to this station, or maybe you just weren't paying attention yesterday to social media and you hadn't really heard that Robbie Scott was brought back up, if you just tuned into that game late and you saw that, you'd have to be like, what, huh?
It's a good point, Murray.
What the hell is this guy even doing here?
Right, it's a good
point.
Let
alone coming into a 2-2 game in the eighth.
Right, so where the hell did this guy come from and why is he putting him in a 2-2? I didn't even think of that. I knew he was on the roster. So when I saw him up, I went, huh? And then when he went to him, because again, they were, now I can't remember if they showed him a Nesson. They showed Scott and Kelly warming together in the bullpen. What I can't remember if it was before or after the Red Sox made the game 2-2, right? Because it was 2-1 going into so
they
it,
were both warming up before they took the tie,
right? But when did Nesson show it? Is what I'm asking. When did Nesson show it? You're saying it was before?
Yes.
Okay. So if it was before, then I sort of look at it and go, all right. Well, if they don't tie the game, I guess he's going to Scott to start the inning. If they do tie the game or go ahead, then it's Kelly. And then they tied the game, and Scott came in anyway. And I'm thinking, what the hell is this guy doing in the game? Why would you bring this guy into it? Boy, he must have a lot of confidence in Robbie Scott. And that one's on Cora. Now, look, here's the good news. Terry Francona had trouble managing in the first half of his first season, too. And he had experience. He had experience in Philadelphia. And by the playoffs, Francona had pretty much sorted it out. In fact, even in August or September of that year, he made another bad managerial mistake with Pedro.
Oh, yeah, he did the same thing Grady Little did, left him in for too many batters.
You remember that, Jimmy. Good job. He did. He left Pedro in a game too long at the end of the 04 season. And then in the playoffs, he tightened it up, and Francona managed a hell of a lot better. So there is, you know, it's a different strategy in the playoffs. You're managing for the short term. As a manager said to me years ago, the regular season's a marathon, the playoffs are a sprint. So in the playoffs, you manage differently. So if that's Cora's thinking, great. But we don't know him yet. We don't know him well enough. So it's hard to have confidence after a decision like that. The second part of that is, let's face it, they don't exactly have great options in the eighth. He did ultimately bring Kelly in the game, and Kelly blew it. Even with guys on base, K Kelly blew it. So whether it's Kelly, whether it's Scott, whether it's Barnes, whether it was Carson Smith earlier in the year, the Red Sox have an eighth inning problem. Which brings us to some comments made by Dave Dombrowski regarding the Red Sox trade collateral. We'll get to that in just a bit here. But first, Dave's in Salem. Dave, what do you got?
Hi, Tony. I've got a question on the board, on your spinning wheel.
Yes.
Do you have Chris Sale as an option? Because I would have let him in to pitch the eighth inning, the bottom of the eighth, at least the first two or three batters. He had two left-handed batters coming up that, you know, he had handled okay earlier in the game. And, you know, these managers are too quick to go to bullpens even when they don't have, you know, the right bullpen guys.
Okay, so, David, look, it's an interesting point, and I had not considered it. Price had thrown 105 pitches, and the Red Sox tied the game. My guess is that when Price came out, I'm sorry, Price, Sale. When Sale had come out of the game, they told him he was done. Okay, that's my guess.
Well, Chris Sale had a max effort inning there, so.
He had two in a row. Two in a row, 24 pitches in the sixth and 24 pitches in the seventh. So, again, I think he threw 105 in the game or something thereabouts. Half of them came in the last two innings. So I think they just told Sale, you're done, that's it, that's the end of it. But since you brought Sale up, my question to you as a Red Sox fan is, do you give Sale a pass on last night's game? And if you remember, at the end of this program last night, I said to you, this Jose Berríos kid for the Twins, I like him. I think he's a pretty good pitcher. Now, there were times last night I looked at him, I said, boy, this guy's geeked up. Like, he's overthrowing, and, you know, he bounces off the mound. Like, there's a lot of energy in that guy. He's got good stuff, though. Berríos has got good stuff. I told you at the end of the show last night, if it's a low-scoring game and Sale loses, I don't want to hear the crying about run support. Chris Sale is a number one starter. He is an ace. He is going to be matched up against the guys who are typically the front-end starters in every rotation on every other team. He is paid or expected to beat those guys. That's the whole point of having Chris Sale, is that when you go up against a Jose Berríos, you beat him 2-1, not lose 2-1.
Hell, I thought they should have won the game 1-0. He was dominant up until that sixth inning. I don't let him off the hook. He was filthy, and then that sixth inning, it fell apart. I think it was a single. He hit someone, and then that doubles machine, Escobar, hit a really tough pitch off his shoelaces into left field, and it's like, okay, it's 2-1 now in favor of the Twins, and it just felt like it all, that was going to be it, you know? They, granted, they did tie the game, but in that sixth, it's just like, okay, you blew it.
And once he lost the no-hitter, he went downhill.
Murray and Jimmy, the timing of the rally for Minnesota bothered me, too. It was a 0-0 game into the sixth. Both guys, you got the sense the game was moving fast.
Yeah.
Right? Here we go. And then Devers hits one into the seats. Woo, here you go. And in fact, right before Devers hit into the seats, Dave O'Brien said, boy, it feels like the kind of game where a big fly is going to decide it. That's what O'Brien said. He used the term big fly, which I hate, but that's why I remember it. Okay? So again, he said it. Two batters later, Devers hits one out. Now it's 1-0, and I'm thinking, Sale's been dominant. They're going to win the game. He comes out and gives up a leadoff single and then hits Mauer, whom he had struck out twice to that point.
And he blows now.
And he owns Mauer. He's owned him his whole career. He owns him. He hit him with a pitch. So we're going to give Chris Sale a pass when he puts two guys on? And then he ends up getting an out. But Escobar ends up hitting a double off his shoelaces. I mean, it was a good piece of hitting by Escobar. But nonetheless, the mistake by Sale came earlier in the inning. So if Sale wasn't available in the eighth inning, getting to the caller's point, it's his own fault. He threw too many pitches in the sixth and seventh when he had a 1-0 lead. You got to tighten it up there. You got to win that game. If that happens in the playoffs and he has a 1-0 lead, you don't excuse him for allowing a single to the number 9 hitter and then hitting the leadoff man who he owns. You can't give him a pass on that. He's not the number one reason they lost, but he is a reason you look at and say, you have your ace on the mound with a 1-0 lead. You can't give the lead back. Can't do it. Dominic's in the car. Go ahead, Dominic.
Hey, Tony, can you hit the pitch well?
Do I think he's doing it on purpose? Like,
yeah.
Consciously?
Like, is he that much of a mental case that, like, this is what he needs to do to get himself to pitch well?
So do I think he's consciously doing it? No, yeah. I don't.
Okay.
I don't think he's so deliberate as if to say, boy, you know, I really need a challenge, so I'm going to fight the media, and that's, you know, so that's what I'm going to do, and it's going to make me pitch better. Do I think he does that? No. Do I think that's who he is? Yes, I do. I think that's who he is.
Okay.
So, and, go ahead, Dominic.
No, go ahead,
No, no, so I just think Price is one of these guys who he needs attention. He needs to be constantly coddled or stroked, or he needs to get your attention by somehow, you know, needling you or feuding with you. And he did that with the media last night. Jimmy, the comment about the All-Star game, if we could grab that one. If you missed this, and Price is relevant today because he's pitching tonight. So to me, this is sort of a, you know, as much as you're going to get one in the regular season with a team that's on pace for 105 wins or whatever it is, which the Red Sox are doing, this is sort of a, you know, a good, an interesting spot for Price. He's been pitching great. Team's won his last seven starts. He's won six in a row. Sales on the mound last night, and they implode in the eighth inning against a team they should beat. So now Price goes out there. This can't be the night he reverts and has a mediocre start. This can't be. And last night, as I think is customary, the media went over to talk to him on the day before he pitches. Price was very, very snippy and then got into this whole thing about candidacy, his candidacy for the All-Star game.
How many pitchers do you think are capable of making the All-Star team?
Pitchers?
Yeah.
One. Sale? I ain't going. I'm not an All-Star.
Kimbrel?
Yeah, Craig. I mean, Craig's going to get his vote. I didn't vote for Craig because it's Craig Kimbrel. He's going to get his vote. So I voted for Joe and Barnes. I did vote for Craig. But Joe Barnes and Craig are who I voted for. But Craig doesn't need votes. His name's going to get him in.
The way you're pitching, how do you... Don't you think the manager will select you?
I feel like if he did, it would just be to get me to throw an extra inning. You know, that would be a pretty pro move on his part. But I'll come up with something to, if I am an all-star, that I won't have to pitch. You know, I've played a lot of Fortnite, you know, the night before, so I'll be down.
So it's really that last part that makes you, what? So he's still mad about the Fortnite thing? Like
definitely.
He honestly doesn't believe that the Fortnite had anything to do with the carpal tunnel, and that was a media creation, and it's the media's fault that he now cannot play Fortnite in the clubhouse. Does Price honestly believe that? Like, I look at that and say, so this is what it is. He's got a feud with the media, and you know what? At the end of the day, all I care about with Price is that he pitches well. So if he has to pick fights with the media to motivate himself, if that's what it takes now, because he signed his big contract, he's got his huge payday, and he thinks he can just coast now on the accomplishments that he's had early in his career, however you want to define those, as Cy Young Awards, because he certainly hasn't had any accomplishments in October. If this is what he has to do, and if this is, then fine, whatever. But I said this to Murray earlier, I'll say to Price now the same thing we said a number of weeks back when he got real sort of snippy after being hit by a ball on the mound and started talking about how, well, he's soft, he normally would come out of that sort of game. Dude, what's your problem? What is your problem?
It's always something. He's been this mercurial ever since he came here. And right now, especially if you look at how he's pitched over the last seven starts, his performance is far more steady than his attitude. It felt like it was all a matter of time before something like this came out again, and here we go.
And
it was such a chore to have to talk to the media, them giving you softball questions yesterday.
And if it takes you, Murray, and me constantly asking him what's your problem to make him pitch well, then I'll keep asking her. See, I don't get the guy.
Right, you're getting the best out of him.
I don't. See, I would say keep pissing him off, because he seems to pitch better when he's pissed off. So I would say let's keep pissing him off, because whatever it is, it's getting the best out of him. He's throwing the ball well right now. Murray's got your headlines, and then we'll get to a very interesting comment made by Dave Dombrowski regarding the trade chips that the Red Sox have at the trade deadline. We'll do that when we come back.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Very interesting comment made by Dave Dombrowski, Red Sox president of baseball operations, to Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal, I'm assuming it was last night, regarding the Red Sox trade chips in the or approaching the July 31st annual trading deadline. I'm going to get to that in a minute, but first I want to take a call here from Brian in a car because it is all related in some capacity. Brian, what do you got?
Hey, Matt. So I was reading an article from some article from Cincinnati, and it's, I guess during the game the other night, the Reds play-by-play announcer.
Yeah, Marty Brenneman. That's right. He's well known. Yep. Keep going.
Yep. I guess he brought up the idea of possibly swapping Blake Swihart and Jackie Bradley for Billy Hamilton.
Okay.
And I was wondering what your view was on that.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, before I let you go, would you do it?
I would.
Okay, you would. And so, listen, I instinctively, when I first heard it, I went, oh, that's interesting. Now, honestly, the more I think about it, and then I looked up some of the numbers. Okay? So the proposed deal, and this was in the Cincinnati Inquirer today, Marty Brenneman apparently said on a broadcast or on an interview that he was out at the College World Series, and that one of the rumors he was hearing was Billy Hamilton to the Red Sox, Cincinnati Reds outfielder Billy Hamilton, who can play center field, to the Red Sox for Jackie Bradley and Blake Swihart. Then I looked it up. And you hear the name Billy Hamilton, and you go, ooh. And you know why you do that? Because he runs fast. But he also hits, I think it's 200. His batting average this year, Billy Hamilton, 208. Jackie Bradley is at 182. Okay, so now look, Jackie Bradley makes Billy Hamilton look like a batting champion. But among qualifying major leaguers now, major leaguers with enough at-bats for the batting title, Billy Hamilton ranks 152nd out of 158 in OPS. Jackie Bradley ranks 154th. So if you go by OPS, they're the same player. Now, Hamilton runs faster. Bradley has more power. And I think Bradley has a better arm. I don't know how Hamilton throws. He's fast. But I hear that, and I say, I have to give up Blake Swihart to get a worse player? Because I actually think Bradley is better than Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton sucks. And I'm not a speed guy, as many of you know. The stolen base might be the most overrated stat in baseball. It's one of them, right there with the save. But, and I'm no Bradley fan. I am not trading him straight up for Billy Hamilton, let alone throw Blake Swihart in the deal too, to make no upgrade really at the position and give up Swihart, who's a trade chip and might be able to get me a reliever. Which brings me to Dave Dombrowski. Sean McAdam of the Boston Sports Journal did a story yesterday that essentially I think we did on this program, or did a story today, that essentially we did on this program last night. In the wake of the Kelvin Herrera deal from Kansas City to the Washington Nationals, I asked the question, do the Red Sox have what it takes to make that kind of deal? McAdam asked the same question. And he says, at first glance, the answer would seem to be no. The Red Sox have graduated everyday players to the big leagues in each of the last 2 years. They've dealt off a dozen or so prospects in the last three seasons, and compounding things is the fact that the team's top pitching prospect and top position player, Jay Groom and Michael Chavis, have no value at the moment because Groom had surgery and Chavis has been popped for PEDs. So McAdam says at first glance, it doesn't appear that the Red Sox have the artillery to make a trade like the one the Washington Nationals made the other night. So we asked Dave Dombrowski. Dombrowski's answer to that question? There's no question we do, yes, Dombrowski said. Okay, again, the question, do you have in your system what it takes to make a deal at the July 31st deadline? Dombrowski's reply, there's no question we do, yes. And this might surprise you. I agree with him. They have enough to make a deal. The question is, what kind of deal? Kelvin Herrera? No shot. You're going to get outbid. I'm surprised Houston didn't get Herrera. But then again, maybe that says something about the price the Nationals paid, which doesn't feel all that great. But to me, I look at the Nationals and say, you didn't give up much. Nonetheless, Herrera, I think, is going to be the best reliever moved at the deadline. Houston didn't make the deal. They have the firepower to make it. The Red Sox don't. Will they be able to make another deal? Sure. But for who? And ultimately, how much is he going to have left? How old is he going to be? What's his stuff? What's his ceiling? Like, all of that? Because I don't think the Red Sox have a lot to trade. Dombrowski will make a deal. You've never heard me say he'll make no deals. My question is, what's the deal going to be relative to what the Yankees do, the Astros do, and teams like the Nationals? Teams who are in the same or have the same need that the Red Sox do at the deadline. John is in New Hampshire. John, what do you got?
Hey, Maz, what's shaking?
Nothing. What's on your mind?
I'm looking at that eighth inning, wondering why Brandon Workman isn't getting a shot.
So, John, look, they have used Workman here in different capacities, too. Do you really think he's the answer in the eighth? The way I phrase the question is unfair, okay, because I don't think he's the answer, but you're not wrong to ask it. You're not, so go ahead.
Do you remember, I know he's not the pitcher he was in 2013, but that guy surprised everybody and was very, very effective. And I rarely see him, and I'm just wondering why they haven't given him more of a shot. And then my question would be, my other question to you is, like, what do they have now? You don't have faith in Kelly?
I don't have faith in any of them, John, honestly. I don't. So this is part of the problem, and thank you for the call. Like, I sort of look at Workman, Kelly, Barnes, even Carson Smith when he was here. All those guys, to me, are sort of the same caliber of reliever. Now, they're different. They have different stuff. Kelly, you know, throws the crap out of the ball, as does Barnes. So maybe there's some similarity there with Kelly and Barnes. You know, Smith is more of a movement guy than he is a pure velocity or stuff guy. Workman doesn't have the stuff of the other two guys. But again, right-handed breaking ball. So, but I ultimately come back to the same thing. Of all those guys, how many of them can really throw a strike, a quality strike, in a pressure situation? So Workman walks four guys per nine innings right now. Overall, he's been okay. He's been pretty good. Maybe ultimately he moves into that role, and I do think Workman has guts. I don't think he's afraid in a big spot. So if you wanted to tell me that, fine. But again, can he really throw quality strikes under pressure? Because I don't think Kelly can. I don't think Barnes can. I don't think Smith could. And even before last night, I didn't think Robbie Scott could. So I would like to see them get a quality reliever like a Kelvin Herrera who can throw strikes under pressure in a big spot. I don't think they have that guy. Will they get him? I don't know. Maybe Dombrowski will show us all something. Maybe he'll deal away prospects that we didn't even know existed and get himself a premium reliever. But I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it. I think they're going to end up with a second-tier reliever, you know, a B-grade type of pitcher, similar to the ones they already have. Those guys are good. They're pretty good. They're just not great or very good. And to me, that's what they need.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.